¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
It's the final 50-50 football of the season. We're going to be joined over the phone shortly by Robbie Scotcher to talk about Sam Allardyce stepping down and what happens next there. But before then, and after then, I've got Paul Senior, Paul Tahaney and Rob Gutman with me. Join me throughout much of the season to talk about the goings-on in the Premier League. A season that ends formally this weekend with the playoff final and the FA Cup final, Chelsea versus Arsenal. This weekend. We'll talk about that in a minute or two, but we're also going to look at the season as a whole, how it unfolded. And I think we'll start at the bottom, Paul Senior, and we'll have a chat about the three that went down. It's all three from a similar part of the world in the northeast of England. Hull, Middlesbrough and Sunderland, they went on quite relatively different journeys. Sunderland were pretty much down from August, which is quite the feat.
Yeah, it's a shame about Sunderland because they're not really a yo-yo club. They go down. It seems they're more like a yo-yo that goes down every decade rather than, every other season or something. But I thought they were being really ambitious in the summer by getting Moyes, and I know that's I think some fans would probably consider that to be a bit of a mad statement, but I thought they were. That's what they were doing. They had Jermaine Defoe. They've got a few other lads there. They managed to keep hold of Kone, the centre half. They had the goalkeeper Pickford, and you think, well, maybe they can do a bit, but it just went sour so quickly. And you know, Hull, I suppose they started off with Mike Phelan and about 10 players and a load of youth team at the beginning of the season, and it only started really to come to life a little bit this season when they got Marco Silva. I think they could have, I think if they'd have acted that way in the summer, then they'd have probably still been in the Premier League now.
They feel the three relegated sides in the end, Robin, you've got to be careful with this because you can always talk yourself into this with sporting things, but they sort of feel like, reading it back, it feels like a murder mystery where you're like, oh yeah, it was obvious all along. Mm. And that's, you know, that's something which, yeah, and maybe that's a disservice to Burnley, whose manager and side have worked ever so hard to ensure that they were never really dragged in any significant way. Maybe that's, you know, it's not taken into account the fact that maybe we're all sitting around and going, well, Karanka's got a strong defensive record, Negredo is quite an exciting signing for Middlesbrough, but the facts remain, at least from Middlesbrough's point of view, that they came up out of the Championship, and it's an interesting thing with a really tight defence. But you can have a tight defence in the Championship, in the Premier League, where you're coming up against so much quality. You're never more than, even at any level, you know, even looking at any of the sides, pretty much any side in the league, you know, Sigurdsson can do something exceptional that leads, that the ball's gone to Llorente, and Llorente can then do something exceptional. And no matter how solid your defence is, that's, you can't stop that for 90 minutes, and you've got that 38 times to deal with. You've got to have a much more balanced approach.
Yeah, I'm trying to think back to how the Middlesbrough story has changed throughout the season as well, though, let's be right. There was a feeling that they'd done some solid business in the summer that sort of gave them something going forward to augment their, you know, the austerity they were capable of batting at the back end of the pitch. Negredo looked an interesting signing. For all us talking about Llorente as though he's an obvious saviour and a great striker for Swansea to have, Negredo could have had that season in a parallel universe. Downing didn't look the, you know, Downing was on a bit of a renaissance. He could have pushed on after doing well for West Ham and beginning to reemerge. Do you know what it shows me? I think, I don't know, make an overarching statement here, but it feels like there was some quality all over the place in this year's Premier League, in as much as the Sunderland, okay, but Hull and Middlesbrough, honestly, they're far from too good to go down. But I think they suffer from a lot of the other teams who might have been considered also-rounds or make-weights actually being of a decent level. They're up against the real Leicester City, you know, who are really a team of the bottom third, but they're a good team of the bottom third. So are Crystal Palace. Watford showed last year that they were a solid proposition and unlikely to feature in a relegation dogfight. Bournemouth likewise. It's only Burnley, really, you go, who could have joined them and who've done particularly well to have kept their way out of it. It's, as you said, you could argue, yeah, it was inevitable, it would be those guys. And yet it feels harsh on them as well. Not on Sunderland. Sunderland, it was bound, you know, it was one bridge too far, wasn't it, in a way?
Paul, it's mentioned, Hull gets a mention there as well, Paul Seedy mentioned at the start the Marco Silva turnaround, showing what a manager can do, but also simultaneously possibly showing the limits of what a manager can do. We talk a lot about our managers, and understandably so, but ultimately, Hull have gone down with 34 points. They've probably got a, you know, they probably had certainly start the season with a 25-point squad. They've done a bit of wheeler-dealing in the January, but they've got about a 34-point squad, maybe a 26-point squad, and the manager deserves credit for 8 points. But if you've got a 26-point squad, you're going to go down.
Yeah, I mean, I thought of the three teams that came out, they were probably the weakest and probably the most likely to go straight back down. I think, you know, looking back, you could say that if Marco Silva was there from the beginning, they might have had a better chance. Didn't they start with Mike Phelan?
Mike Phelan, yeah.
You know, I never saw that working, to be honest, and it was almost like a little bit of sentiment involved in that one, as opposed to for the good of the club, and they could have missed a trick there. Not saying that Marco Silva would have been available then, we don't know that, but you like to think they would have done better. With Middlesbrough, they had Karanka, and what I liked, not so much I liked, they were solid, like you say, but you have always got that possibility in the Premier League that you will concede a goal to anybody at any time. So I think they done one of two things. When they went the other way, it was almost like they became too open and they still never scored goals. So you might as well have just been solid and not scored goals and hope that you sneak some 1-0 wins along the way. So, yeah, a bit disappointing for Middlesbrough. And they have got some good players, you know. Gaston Ramirez, the young lad, is it Traore?
The flying winger.
The flying winger.
Adama Traore.
No end product whatsoever, but... You know, if he...
But watch him go.
Yeah, you get... Well, and put the right manager in front of him and maybe you might get more out of him as well. And Sunderland, you know, it was the David Moyes kind of morose, you know, negative. You never really felt like he felt they could survive as well. It was almost like they were on a hide into nothing.
Shame they couldn't harness what Jermaine Defoe was doing, you know, and ride on the crest of that. He gave them optimism when they had no right for any, didn't he?
He did, but he can't do it on his own. And just knew that as soon as those goals, you know, dried up, because, you know, at his age, I couldn't see. Jermaine's never been one of those that have scored the whole season. You know, he's never been a more than a 15-goal-a-season guy. So I didn't see that lasting. So the writing was on the wall as soon as those goals dried up.
He's not even a sort of... Luis Suarez or Thierry Henry, who maybe could have done it on his own either. He's very reliable on services as well. And to get the sort of numbers he got, I thought was a testament to Jermaine Defoe. And obvious why Bournemouth have gone and been willing to pay him so much money, because that could be the difference for them in four or five places.
It's a nice little fit, actually, Jermaine
Defoe. It's his first club, isn't it, well? Which, you know, is always a nice story. But yeah, Sunderland. I'd love to have known the points total without him, you know. Or, you know, if you've, what is he, 33, 34, Jermaine Defoe, maybe
34.
Yeah, so I mean, they've basically gone into a season relying on a 34-year-old striker who basically 2 years ago turned around and went, "I'm going to play in the MLS because I think I'm finished," you know, and almost had this. The swan song, so it was dangerous territory from day one.
Going above those then, there's 6 points between Hull in 18th and Watford in 17th as the league finished. It's interesting with Watford and Burnley, because I think we all felt throughout the season it was very rare either of them were truly in trouble, and yet they're the sides that have finished 16th and 17th. There's then 6 points from Watford in 17th to Southampton and Bournemouth in 8th and 9th. Which is one hell of a blanket you can throw over these clubs. And I just want your instinctives on each of them going right the way down, and then we'll talk about a couple of them that grab our attention as to whether or not you feel they've had a bad season or a good season, no more, no less. And we'll just go from sort of top to bottom. So we'll start with Southampton. And I just honestly just want your sort of your emotional instinctive responses. Southampton, 46 points, goal difference of -7. Paul, good or bad season?
It's hard to say good or bad. They got to a League Cup final and they played in Europe, so it probably didn't look great in their league form, but they actually just went and finished 8th, which I presume was the target.
middle. Can I say middle?
All right, you can have top, middle, or bottom.
Yeah.
Bournemouth, Paul Dehaney.
Bournemouth, good season.
Good season?
Yeah, definitely a good season.
Yeah, great season.
46 points. West Brom, 45 points.
Good for 31, two games. Yeah,
it feels good. I mean, we've been saying it's good so long, can't suddenly not be good.
Yeah, in with the resources that they've got, good season.
Okay, West Ham, Paul Dehaney. Feels awful.
It underachieved, but there's mitigating circumstances, i.e. injuries and new stadium.
Mitigated, yeah, it feels like a very bad season for them, I would say. That's before I went to that ground and then understood everything.
Well, we haven't had a conversation about that ground. Let's actually do that now then. So when you say you understood everything, how awful was it?
Well, you know, at the risk of overplaying it, Paul and I were there together a couple of weeks ago to watch Liverpool there, and a friend of ours said, Jesus, if this was us and we turned up first day and it'd been the new Anfield, I'd have just jibbed it, were his words. And I totally knew what he meant. It's not a stadium for football. And people can go, what do you mean by that? You go, it's not just about it being a bit far from the pitch. Go and see it. And go and see the pain. If you're, especially if you're from a club like a Liverpool or a West Ham, one of the old clubs in the old grounds who are used to being tight to a pitch, used to being very involved, and almost feeling you're part of the game, which is lamentably not becoming something you see at football grounds, then this was as far as you can move from that. It was like you were with being in a baseball ground. It was crazy. It didn't make sense.
It was like a pre-season stadium. Like,
yeah.
You know,
How can I put it? I think it's more it's the most beautiful, well situated, with all the transport links in the world and stuff like that. Ground, you never wish
everything
to see.
Everything's great apart from the ground. Basically,
there's people. Like, it was a sunny day when Liverpool played, and they're sitting there on the banks of a what looks like a canal or some sort of river. It wasn't the Thames.
It's a shitty canal.
Yeah, it was a shitty canal somewhere. There was loads of food stalls and all the facilities in the world you wanted. And then you do the proper walk up to the ground, and it's fucking miles away.
It is.
And you get into the ground, and I was on the very, very back row. And I honestly think it was the furthest away from any. I was at the very back of the Bernabeu once, and I was much closer than I was.
And
there.
You're in space there.
Yeah, and you know, I had to wear oxygen masks and stuff in the Bernabeu, and I was still closer to the pitch. It was horrendous, and I think Rob's absolutely right. Whoever said it to Rob, I would not go the match every week if I was a West Ham United supporter. No chance.
I'd have been crying, literally crying. You've taken my club away from me. I just don't know. They just didn't. Somebody didn't sit in that ground. It just beggars belief they did that to them.
Without sort of pushing on to Spurs too quickly, when they were rebuilding the ground, one of the first things they wanted to do was not lose the atmosphere. So apparently the stadium to the pitch is going to be the closest for a stadium that size, you know, around. It's like going to be 5 yards from the. So there's going to be none of that running track business.
And yeah,
just so important. You're going to be there for years. So surely they must have took that into consideration.
Paul, you tried for that stadium. You are
there,
so
for the grace of
mate,
God, Ghost
it was Spurs. A futile kind of. Daniel Levy did it basically to get Haringey Council on side and to get, you know, almost like doing it as a threat. I didn't ever think it would go through, but even if it did, or even if it would have done, thankfully it didn't.
Yeah.
Okay. Leicester, good season, bad season.
Weird season. I think actually, if you look at what they've achieved since they made the decision, everyone was up in arms about. I think they've been very good. I think, you know, when Shakespeare took over and played Liverpool, since then they've done well. They've sort of gone back to par of where I think they were towards the end of the season. And I think if they were from that first game I mentioned, to, you know, for a 38-game season, and they got that sort of points level, I think they'd be a competitive side. And I think they'd do...
Be around Everton.
Yeah, that's what I genuinely think that's what the level is. I think they're a lot better than some people will... They weren't a bad side that won the title, and they're not a bad side now. I think what they'd been through clearly impacted the start of the season. It just didn't get going again, and they were, you know, they had that quite literal hangover by the looks of things from May.
Certainly where Wes was concerned.
Yeah, but I think this summer they'll have resources to buy again after a Champions League season and finishing. What did they finish 12th? Did you say?
there's two contexts. Go back 15 months, it's a season that he killed for, right? It's also a season which is one of the greatest seasons in the history of that football club because of the Champions League and because of the decent and because of a half-decent league finish. In the context of winning the league, if you'd asked them then, would you take getting out of the group stage but finishing that far down the table, none of them would have taken that.
Do you think? I think they might have done, you know, getting out of the group. Certainly if you were to phrase it this way, English side that goes furthest in the Champions League.
Yeah, they're like that.
you've got to come 12th.
I think I'm going to call it a neutral rather than a good or bad one for them.
Yeah, I think that you always, for me, that was always going to happen. You know, I said it from the beginning of the season, they would look at the Premier League and then look at the Champions League and actually think they could go further in the Champions League because there's so many one-off games, such a short... I don't think they could ever dream of doing a 38 game season or getting anywhere near the levels, not even Champions League. So I think they would have settled between 12th and 10th and get into the quarterfinals of the Champions League.
One of the things interesting is they probably wouldn't have had a few of these sides. It's where the points totals ended up. You know, 44 just doesn't feel, you know, across a 38 game season, it just doesn't feel great. I'm thinking there, I don't feel like we've won enough games, lads. And, you know, we haven't had enough moments where we get to win a football match. That's one of the things, you know, if you're Leicester last season after having won so many games and had the feeling of these victories and how brilliant it would have been. I think it's an interesting, I think that's why so many of these, when we're talking, and we're going to go on to Stoke in a minute, so many of these, are, you know, they're all middling conversations. They're all, well, this, but that. Yeah. Whereas, you know, eighth place shouldn't just be 46 points. It should be 53, 54, 55. And when you stop to think about that, that's three more wins, which is significant across the course of the season. You know, we're talking about sides. I'll look at it this way around. Southampton, Bournemouth, West Brom, West Ham, Leicester, Crystal Palace and Swansea all won 12 games. That's only 12 times they've got to celebrate victory. Now, that's fine from a Swansea point of view. They were fighting relegation 4 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. That makes sense. But if you decide that's come eighth, and you've got the same number of wins on the board as the sides, that...
Isn't that kind of symptomatic of the way that league is now? That the top six, plus maybe one in their own kind of right, are taking so many points off
Liverpool were eighth last season. What was our points total? 64.
I think it was 62, I think, but I'll check it in a second.
But there you go.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I mean, Arsenal got 75 points, which was more than what they got last year, and they finished second.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
And they didn't make the Champions League.
That's it. It's everyone taking points off each other, isn't it? So I think this year the top five, six have sort of been taking maximum points off pretty much everyone below them.
Apart from Liverpool, who gave all those teams their points.
Yes.
Liverpool got 60 points last season when they finished eighth, but 60 points is still hugely different to 46. Yeah. And then Stoke got 51, Chelsea got 50, Everton got 47, Swansea got 47, that's 12th. So 12th last season got more than 8th this season, and those other numbers are significant. But the other thing to point out when you say that as well, Rob, just on this, not only when we're talking about these sides, they also... You know, with the exception of Liverpool for a couple of them, but even then, it is only a couple of them. Those 12 wins have mostly just been against each other. So again, if we're talking about people enjoying the football, well, you know, Southampton have picked up 12 wins this season in the league, and let's just concentrate on the league for a second. And I think I'm right in saying they didn't beat any of Chelsea, Tottenham, Manchester City, Liverpool, Arsenal, or Manchester United in a league game.
No.
So they haven't even had... Forget the idea that they've only been able to celebrate a victory in less than a third of the games. But they actually also haven't celebrated what feels like a great win. They haven't had the, you know what, lads, we've stuck one on them there moments. And that, I just sort of concern myself, can be concerned in this, in terms of, well, what exactly... What's the pathway here then? What's your Southampton? And Southampton are a good example this season because they at least got the cup run. So they get to feel like, yeah, we had days out, we beat Liverpool, we pushed United to the limits, we did really well. But if you actually just take that out for a second, you know, you're looking at the games that they've won and they haven't had a cop for us moment in the whole of the league season.
That's why I don't think at any stage with these clubs we were talking about and where we have talked about some of the middle table teams in previous seasons as being good. I remember last year or the year before talking about Stoke and going, oh, they got some good lads because they'd gone and beaten Arsenal. Or Southampton, you know, you're fancying Koeman because he'd got a scalp or two under his wing. The Leicesters as well. Yeah, you're right. It's been a scalp-free season apart from my team, Liverpool giving it up once or twice. I think we lost disastrously to Hull, to Leicester, to Palace.
Swansea and Bournemouth, they're the ones.
So all those guys. You know, that's they've all got Liverpool's scalp. And Liverpool busied themselves with taking the scalps of all the top six. It's a weird season in many respects.
But it's also, Paul, I'll go Paul. we'll see you next on this. But I think it's weird, but it's also, it's where that ends up. The next time we're going to talk about Stoke's a football club that sort of feels like it's lost its purpose. You know, we've experienced getting beat 6-1 at Stoke.
Yeah.
Also experienced Stoke being a tough place to go. But this season, Stoke have not troubled anybody. August, September, they shipped four to Man City and Tottenham at home in back-to-back home games. You keep pushing throughout the rest of the season. Yes, they get a plucky draw at Old Trafford. But, you know, you look, then they have a mild resurgence where they beat Sunderland, Hull and Swansea. They get a point against West Ham. But none of these games are what, you know, they're not the season that memories are made of from a Stoke City point of view. They finished 13th. They've got the 44 points on the board, but they've probably not had a single good day out.
No, and I think honestly, if you look at that from 7th to 20th, you could probably argue they're in ability order, quite literally. So if you think Stoke are they better than West Ham? Well, it's marginal, but you know, maybe West Ham have got a little bit more class here and there, a bit more off the bench. Stoke in particular, you know, I think you think of the job Tony Pulis was doing there. I think that was for a reason, because that was the competitive edge that maybe got him two or three places up the table. Now under Mark Hughes, he might play stuff that's a bit easier on the eye, and I could probably swallow watching that side more every week, but they fall 3 point places below, and that's sort of I'm not intimidated going to Stoke.
But they've also lost the idea that they're going to bloody your nose, that there's going to be that there's a bit of oomph in it, and that I think that's
Bojan and Gerrard and Shaqiri aren't going to do that to you, are they? That was exactly my point.
And I think that's what, you know, for instance, that's why it is a shame if Allardyce has taken himself out of football in one sense, Paul, and certainly for the reasons that, you know, where it seems quite a personal thing for him that he wants to go and spend time with his family. Coming on to talk about Palace in a minute, where Stoke, you know, they haven't had that good season. Palace have, and partly because they're in a bit of a relegation dogfight, but also they've gone to Liverpool and got a win. They've gone to Chelsea and got a win, and that's at least something. That's something a little bit different. The worry for me is, you know, we've seen crowds in other countries begin to dry up for a variety of reasons. Crowd numbers of people going to football matches, and it becomes hard if you don't feel as though your football club's genuinely moving forward, genuinely competing, like possible, not likely, but, you know, we've got a decent chance here today against Arsenal. We've got a decent chance here today against Spurs.
I mean, it's two ways of looking at it. It's from the fans' point of view and from the club's point of view. And from the club's point of view, they'll be absolutely delighted finishing at, you know, 13th, Stoke. Where did they finish?
13th
from
the end.
13th, right? Stoke are going to be earning millions. They'd much rather be 13th than struggling against relegation or getting relegated. So you've got these clubs like Stoke, Watford, West Brom, you know, that are always going to be kind of Southampton to a certain extent, because I feel Southampton should be doing better with the players that they've got, to be honest. And, you know, I'm not talking about us better. I'm talking about more, you know, sort of six. Everton. Should be competing with Everton.
Those teams were last season, though, weren't they? Were Southampton 7th last year or Stoke 9th?
Yeah.
Is that Europe for them? I don't know.
Southampton are the ones who I think you can give a bit of pass to, but Stoke last season finished 9th, Southampton finished 6th. It's more last season Southampton supporters turned up, and it's more that they just watched 18 wins, if you know what I mean, than watching 12. Yeah. You know, it's that idea of that's what you want as a supporter.
So that's it. That's from a supporter's point of view, of course. I think they will, and I've heard, you know, some disdain from supporters of those clubs saying they want more entertainment, you know. I think they'd rather be like Bournemouth. You know, Bournemouth can lose a 4-3, win a 4-3, and, you know, they'll have ups and downs, but they'll always play good attacking football, and they're always pleasing on the eye. And to a certain extent, I'd say that about Swansea as well. They try to play no matter what the circumstances. And I think that these teams that the aforementioned, not so much Southampton, but the Stoke and West Broms and Watford are the most kind of, without any disrespect to Watford people out there, I almost don't think about them as being involved in last season for some reason.
I don't remember watching many games
from them. I don't know if they haven't been selected that much. I know. It was just because they're just not a good team to watch. But apart from the two Spurs games where I think we put 4-5 or 4-4 past them, I don't really remember much about them. And I can remember everyone else. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
It's a strange season for Watford, really. Yeah, I'm quite the same. I wouldn't be able to close my eyes and tell you where they were in the table at any one situation. They finished just above relegation, did they?
17th in the end.
That's crazy. I mean, yeah, I can think of them. Well, Liverpool beat them in the run-in, City thrashed them on the last day. So maybe they're quietly
They lost the last six.
That would do it.
That happens.
That would do it. Yeah, you've got to say that that is not going to stand them in good stead.
But again, let's look at it logically. I mean, Watford really finishing, you know, where they did in the Premier League, they'll be quite happy about that instead of being in the Championship, you know, although the millions that it brings.
I feel it feels a little bit like they've used up all the goodwill. You know, there's two types of teams that come up, aren't there? There's those that are set to go straight back down, and there are those plucky ones who quickly get themselves into mid-table, yo-yo around that position, and go, they've really established themselves. I think Watford's lasted, 15 months, their establishment phase, and they seem like they're beginning. That feels like a spiral. I didn't realise it was six defeats. And the manner of the one on the last
six
day...
Six defeats, seven and eight. But the manager's gone and you know, before the ball was kicked on the last day.
When Liverpool went there, weren't they four or five unbeaten at the same...
No, they were... When Liverpool went there...
Maybe four home they were wins on the bounce. They were on
they were on a nice little run where but again, it's back to who they're playing. So they've beaten Sunderland at home 1-0, West Brom at home 2-0, and Swansea at home 1-0.
Yeah.
So they were tight at the back. They were doing sensible things. They were just getting results against the sides that were around them, and they pulled themselves out of the mire. Listen, the next one on my list is Crystal Palace. Spoke to Robbie Scotcher earlier about some analyst stepping down. This is what he had to say.
Joined by Robbie Scotcher, indeed. Robbie, it's the strange timing of it, really. It's pretty immediate off the back of the end of the season that Sam Allardyce, and you know, let's take his statement at face value. He wants to sniff the flowers. He wants to spend time with his grandchildren. He wants to go and have a nice life. And he feels as though Palace has given him what he needed, which was one last go of proving himself. And if you do take him at face value, at least in the short term, that's that.
I mean, I do take him at face value. I really do. I'm not going to say I'm not completely gutted about it, really, and it came as a shock. But I mean, I think you read his statement, and yeah, I mean, I actually honestly do believe he decided to do that. I think a lot of people said when he came into Palace that he didn't quite seem the same man as he was when he went into the England job. You can imagine that must have had a bit of effect on him, the media scrutiny and everything. And I think he's come in, and he's done an amazing job at Palace. We did not look like staying up, and he changed the team. He did great in the transfer window, and he's kept us up. And to be fair, maybe, you know, you can't blame a man that he wants to look, you know, hang around with his grandkids and take the money and enjoy the rest of his life. And he's not young, is he?
Well, he says, one of the things he actually says is he feels young enough at 62 to be able to do this. I'll just read a paragraph from his statement. I want to be able to save a life while I'm still relatively young and when I'm still relatively healthy enough to do all the things I want to do, like travel, spend more time with my family and grandchildren without the huge pressure that comes with being a football manager. And it's it is relatively rare that that our managers full stop, sort of, certainly English managers, but not just English managers, find that sort of language in any case, if you know what I mean. So that's one of the reasons why I think, for me, the statement sort of it rings very true at face value. That's not to say that, you know, if there's a club in trouble in 12 months or 18 months or 24 months' time and they give Sam a ring, he might have feel he's done his fill of that sort of stuff for a bit and I might want to come back in. But it does, you know, I'd be stunned to see him take another job before the first game of the season.
Oh, totally. I mean, I completely take his statement as true. I do. And you kind of look at it and you as well. Where would he go? I don't think at the minute any of the top eight. I mean, Southampton is the only potential job you could look at and think that he might go. But even then, I don't think that's where his family are. And I think the England job just took... I think he took a massive hit there. And I know it sounds a weird thing to say, but he's a very humane man. You know, he does wear his heart on the sleeve a little bit. And I think we've seen a lot of really who Big Sam is as a human being throughout his whole career. And I think this is a very genuine statement. And, you know, I suppose all he can do is you look back, thank him, wish him well, you know. And I hope he enjoys his retirement.
It rocks the club a little bit on the, I'd say, you know, on the back of the fact that, you know, he's replaced Pardew and he's done well, as you point out, and he's got them playing a certain way and playing a certain sort of style of football that, as I say, wasn't just the sort of the cliched version of Sam Allardyce football, but there was a bit more to it. It's what happens sort of now, really, where you can look at it any one of sort of two or three ways. If you're Crystal Palace, you can see it as we finished 14th. Yes, we were in a relegation scrap, but we think that the essence of this squad is there. And we can be ambitious, or you can think we need to guard against another relegation scrap and go in that direction. Which direction do you think the club will go in?
Well, this is the danger. I mean, you are a bit hamstrung sometimes by who's available and who's around. And I was talking to some Palace fans today, and I said, we can't let the Pardew era, you know, stop our idea of progression. If you've got to try, and I think as a football club, you've got to try and progress. And maybe we tried to go a little bit too far with Pardew's ideas of how it went. In the end, the players just weren't fit enough. And we conceded goals at silly times. When you watch Palace play, it was, you know, there was some knife-edge decisions there and stuff, and it could have gone the other way. I don't think, like, there's a lot of people, you know, people mention various different managers. I really hope that we're looking for someone who obviously has a solid ethos about what they want to do, but then also to build. We can't look at just staying up. I really want us to push on. Don't get me wrong. I do not think for one second that we're going to be in European spots next season, even though we've still got a good squad. But we've got to be aiming for that. We've got to be aiming for seventh or eighth. And I'm, you know, you sit there now as a Palace fan, you see all these people come up and you're looking how they fit. And it's difficult to see. I think Silva's the one they're really going for at the minute. But I mean, how much have we seen of him? I'm not sure really.
Well, I mean, across the board, what I would say is that the people being linked are all, with the exception of Hodgson, they're all progressive, interesting managers. You know, you've got Mancini's been linked, and yes, you know, it'd be an ambitious move. His football's not necessarily always been stellar, but he's very much gets players in and around him. You mentioned Silva there as well, who's just done really, really well with Hull. Ranieri's been mentioned. He's knocking around. He's a name as well. So there's definitely things there which suggest that they're thinking more from the positive sort of direction than the how do we stop it from happening direction.
Yeah, totally. And you've got to remember, we have got a lot of good players, and if you bring in a really defensive coach, or you bring in someone from the Championship or something, I don't know how that's going to entice players to come to Palace necessarily. We want players to come to our club, and we want a player to think that he'd like to play under that manager. In the same way, we don't want the current crop of players we've got to turn around and go, do you know what, I don't fancy playing under Sean Dyche. Nothing against Sean Dyche, great manager. But do you know what I mean? So I think it's a really difficult choice. What else is quite interesting is we've only ever had one foreign manager, ever.
Mm.
It's never been something we've done before. So this really is quite an interesting crossroads, turning point, however you want to look at it, for the board and what they're going to do. I think on top of that as well, I'm hearing rumours, and this is just a rumour, that our next sponsorship deal is huge. We've managed to get a sponsorship deal with a foreign company. And apparently it's enormous, especially if the first deal with this particular country in this particular way. I think that could be huge potentially. I think that could also put some money on the table there to spend in transfers. Obviously, we spent a lot of money in the winter break, and that's going to affect the fair play. So we're going to have to sell players or whatever else as well. But it's a really interesting time, really is. I just, you know, thank God Chris Coleman said he's not interested.
There is just, you know, the other name that's been sort of mentioned as well is, I saw it earlier today in the Liverpool Echo, is Pellegrino, the former Liverpool defender who joined Rafa Benitez's backroom staff, and he's been mentioned, currently at Alaves, he's been mentioned as well. So when you mention the overseas thing, you know, I refuse to believe, given everything that you know and we know about Parrish, that he's not going to be one of those chairmen who's got his own list of one and he's got to get him at all costs. It feels like he's the sort of chairman who will look at his options, but what that means is the news that gets out is who those options are. So you mentioned the overseas thing, and, you know, I would fancy that it looks as though Palace are looking like an overseas manager is very, very likely.
Yeah, I hope so. I really hope so, because the English manager we mentioned, another manager that people are talking about is Hodgson. Now, he's born Croydon. He's from the area. He played for Palace, but I mean, I don't want to see that personally as a Palace fan. Again, I'm not saying anything against. I mean, I can. We're talking around your neck of the woods. You don't like him that much either.
No.
but yeah, I don't want to see that. I would want. What would be great? We have got an amazing backroom staff from Sam Allardyce, and Sammy Lee is. I can't say enough about Sammy Lee as a coach. I think the guy is absolute gold. And if we were to get a foreign manager to come in, and if we kept that backroom staff, that could be quite interesting. or a fund manager that comes in maybe with a few members of staff, but to keep Sammy Lee in that position, I think that would be a great bridge between English football, a foreign manager, Palace ethos, foreign manager, that type of thing. I think that would work amazingly well. And I would rather see a young manager. I mean, we're not going to win the league. We're not. So I want to see a young manager come in, a young manager who's got something to prove, who's hungry. That's what I want to see. I don't want to see, Hodgson.
Well, Sammy Lee's obviously worked with Pellegrino in the past, so that's again another interesting little link there. Listen, yeah. Robbie, always good to speak to you. This has been our last 50-50 of the season, so thanks for coming on all season and talking about Crystal Palace. And we will grab you when the next man comes in and have a chat about all that sort of stuff.
Absolutely, mate. So, I mean, I've loved it, and congratulations at the end of the season there. Watching that game.
Thank you very much indeed, yes. More relief than anything, Robbie. But let's get back and let's speak to everybody else about the Palace situation.
Always good to speak to Robbie. Crystal Palace now in a bit of a funny position. But they've been in a funny position, it feels now, for about 18 months. it's since halfway through the previous season, Paul. I think it's a real opportunity for a manager, Palace, in a strange way. It now feels like Allardyce has done the bit between Pardew and the next thing, if you sort of know what I mean. So I think, Paul Senior, I think it's a good job, and it wouldn't surprise me if they're able to attract a pretty interesting candidate, especially given the players that they've actually got at the disposal of the club right now.
Yeah, I think when this job's popped up a little bit, hasn't it, the last couple of years, they've always been a job I thought, if I was a football manager, it'd be one that would interest me. So after Pardew left, I felt, there's a squad there for the right manager, and they go to Allardyce for obvious stability reasons, I imagine. Never been relegated, and that's, I think that's, if this is his final job in football, well, that will always stay with him, and that's maybe testament to him, I say through slightly gritted teeth. The job now, though, you look at a side with Christian Benteke, Wilfred Sahar. I think Scott Dan's a very good centre half. They've got Johan Cabaye. There's quality there, and there's something that, and I think there's a little bit of strength and depth as well. I think they've maybe actually got across the board maybe two lads for every position. I'm not saying in the same way that Pep Guardiola would dream of two lads for every position, but they've got numbers. Even lads like Patrick Van Aanholt, who they added in January, is a very good Premier League left back. He could, the same way that he could probably stand out in the Chelsea side instead of Victor Moses this year, he would do a job for a good side as much as he would do for a lower table side. So it's a good job. I would like to. The danger is you go there and you try and play a brand of football which everyone gets behind and stuff. And I think Pardew maybe tried that. To go, okay, well, we sort of stabilised as a Premier League club, and now I'd like to actually entertain a little bit, and then results just don't go the right way. I think that's a danger, but if they were ambitious enough to go and get someone of a decent ilk, I don't know, a Brendan Rodgers type manager, a real statement manager, I think they could do quite well with the side they've got.
Yeah, they were a club we looked at last summer and talked about the new money in the Premier League in particular, and go, look, a club of their stature is going out and spending 30 million on Christian Benteke. I think was it 15 or something like that on Andros Townsend. There's a few other signings they made. Cabaye, I think, had been another one they spent a couple of quid on. And you suddenly thought, wow, if one of these teams gets it right, they could establish themselves in near the top third of the table. And it somehow went disastrously wrong in that first phase under Pardew of the season. And the in a way, Allardyce is... I mean, it is an achievement because he corrected a slide and then some. But it's still only sort of really bringing them back to the par of what they should have achieved with that squad. And Paul's right, if they get the right manager, and I assume they will have money again, given that everyone gets about 100 million in the summer these days, and certainly, the only teams that are outspending the Premier League's middle rankers are the top teams in Spain and Germany and Italy. you know, if the planets align for them, they could have a very, very good season. I'm struggling to think of obvious games. Gary Monk's freed himself or been freed from Leeds in some way today.
I don't think that's ambitious enough.
No, it possibly isn't, but it's what you... But he could do well.
It fits their profile.
He could do well. I don't necessarily think... I mean, we saw
Mancini, Pellegrino, Ranieri, these are all... Marco Silva, these are all the people that are being linked to the top links. Yeah, they're all being linked. So I suspect that Palace are going to take a bit of time to look at it.
Paul Hodgson written all over it.
Paul Dehaney, Swansea got themselves into 15th in the end, and you know gives them a base to rebuild from. I think that a few of their supporters will feel as though they've got themselves lucky this season, but they've got themselves out of the mire. They've got themselves the other side, and it gives them an opportunity to get back to being the sort of side that finishes 10th, 11th, and 12th with a minimum of fuss.
Yeah, I mean, big respect to the manager. What's his name?
Clement.
That guy. You know
that's
what?
A lot of respect that.
No. Do you know why I always said that? Because he reminds me. I get him mixed. If I've got Sky Sports on and I'm not looking and I hear him speak, it sounds like Eddie Hearn, man. Next time you get on it, right? Paul Clement sounds exactly like Eddie Hearn when he speaks. Doesn't look like him. But, Eddie Hearn. No, Paul Clement. He's, when he first came in, he'd done a really good job and I thought, oh, here we go. And then he went through this period where they couldn't buy a win, and I think there was a game where we played them where they were 1-0 up in the 89th minute and somehow lost 3-1 at home. And I thought, that's it for them. They're not coming back from this.
Yeah.
So I think Fernando Llorente played a big part in that, because he was out in that game, actually, and he was out for a few games, and that coincided with some poor results. He was linked with Chelsea in January, and a lot of people were like, I can't really see that. Where's the mental? Conte had him at Juve. Yeah, he knows all about him, and he's always been one of those players that's... He's not really rated highly outside of people who have him at their club. And you saw that, and I think he could literally play at any level as a kind of an impact striker to come in.
When he was leaving Bilbao... The world wanted them.
Yeah.
And I think Juventus got him on... I may be wrong. He may have got one free. He was one that I think the world was after. And it never quite worked out, I don't think, for him at Juventus. But I don't know how he quite ended up at Swansea. It's one of them, you know, the way you think to yourself, why...
Looks like a bit of a shop window job
I think he wanted to get in the Premier League.
Yeah.
And it was maybe, well, who wants me? Well, there's a club there that have been in the Premier League for 3 or 4 years. You might not know loads about them, but they're stable enough, you know.
I wouldn't be surprised to see him rock up at another club, a bigger club. No disrespect to Swansea. No. Gylfi Sigurdsson, again, absolutely magnificent throughout the whole season.
I think he's the best number 10 outside the top six.
Without a shadow of a doubt.
Is he a true number 10, Gylfi Sigurdsson?
He can play off the left as well, you know, but not too wide left, but sort of coming in off the left.
The Tottenham.
I thought he was more number eight.
I don't know.
Tottenham. Pochettino admitted this season, earlier on in the season, in an interview, that it was a mistake to let him go, and Pochettino hadn't been at the club long enough to really have a good look at him. They let him go because everyone just thought, well, Eriksen's in that position, and he's getting shunted out wide on the left. That's not his position. We'll do without him. But really, with the amount of games that we play now, you need two players at least of that position. You know, Lallana, Coutinho, you know, you've got an abundance of them. You can't have enough of those players. You don't all have to play in the same game, but just to have that option when things aren't going well and your usual guy is not turning it on, which Eriksen, Coutinho... As brilliant as both are, we've both said, or all said on this programme, that they can have periods where you think, they're not their normal self.
Yeah.
And then they're on fire. But you need a couple of them.
Yeah, there's times a season, especially when Coutinho was coming back from the injury he got around Christmas, where if you just said to me, you can just blood him back a little bit, but, you know, Gylfi Sigurdsson's going to take his place, that'd have been over the moon.
Yeah.
You know, from what I've seen, I've got an Evertonian friend who his number one guy that he wants this summer is Gylfi Sigurdsson. Yeah.
Would that be if Barkley goes?
I think that would be the natural
replacement.
I'm a bit mystified by Gylfi Sigurdsson. I've never really understood what kind of a player he is. I tried to scout him in Liverpool. Brendan Rodgers was desperate to have him at Liverpool. And Spurs nicked him off his toes. And I'd seen him at Spurs and I thought he reminded me a lot of players get compared to David Platt. A poor man's Mkhitaryan, a poor man's Dele, a lad who will break or
and
strong
to be honest, he was that. And at Spurs, to be honest, and it was more to do with the fact that he wasn't playing, because as soon as he started playing regularly at Swansea, you've definitely seen a consistent level from him, you know, not just in periods, like throughout the whole season.
But has he got quick... I'm interested. Has he got quick feet? Can he thread a 10-yard pass?
He can pass.
I mean, you're comparing him to Coutinho. I mean, I never saw him in a million years being anything like that.
I wouldn't
player.
Say I'm comparing... I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not...
Positionally.
Positionally, yeah. Mm. He can come in from either side. I think he probably fit what Koeman's trying to do at Everton more than Barkley would. He seems like a more natural fit, and he'd probably be able to do both deals with... substantial change, I'd say, as well. So I think that would be the... If you ask me to bet on where he goes this summer, that... But, you know, there's European That's, clubs there. Well,
I think De Bruyne has got the most goals and assists for a midfielder, and then it's Eriksen, and then Gylfi's next on that list. So he supplies a lot of goals as well. He's got that free kick. He's probably the best free kick taker up there with Coutinho in the Prem. So yeah, there's a lot to like.
It's going to be interesting for those teams next season. All the teams we've just been discussing, they've all got one or two lads who they are probably going to go, and it's how they deal with that. So, I mean, Southampton have put up with and survived this year on, year out, and possibly we saw the first signs last season of not, because Southampton, I don't think, have developed three players that the world wants.
Still can't believe no one's gone for Les Reed. You know, the guy makes all the decisions there. You know, you look at Monchi going to Roma and the money that they're doing there, but Liverpool are I don't know how much money we've spent, but it's a lot. Why no one's going for the actual guy behind the recruitment and the thought process behind the managers that they keep getting who seem to
be
top.
I think we had a go at trying to get him once or twice. The one thing I was going to say about the transfer situation is it'd be interesting to see if these players do, these clubs do lose their key players, because I've started to see a trend in the last couple of seasons with the riches that are in the Premier League that teams are putting their foot down and saying, you know, we don't really need to sell, you know. Seen it with Troy Deeney, see it with Berahino with us, you know. In what world would you have West Brom turning down £20 million for Berahino when he had like 1 year left on his contract? So I think teams have got a stronger stance and more money, you know, to hold on to their players.
Okay, next we're along Burnley before we go to the top and talk briefly about the FA Cup final. Burnley find themselves job done, Paul Senior. It's a good season, it's a very good season for them. They were never ever truly in trouble. They just consistently kept the wolf from the door. It's 11 wins across 38 games, all relatively spaced out. So everything that they needed to do, they show patience and faith.
Brilliant. I like Burnley as well, so I'm pleased. I didn't get to do the Burnley away this year, which is quite possibly my favourite away, as you know, Neil. Where did they finish?
In the end, they just finished 16th.
Yeah, which I think's harsh, I would say, because you know, when you think have they really been in any danger to, apart from maybe the last 2 weeks of the season? I think they've always done quite well. I think the job Sean Dyche has done there has been nothing short of outstanding, really. And done it through not really spending that much money. They brought in DeFore, didn't they, in the summer, who seemed to be a wise bit of business and a little bit of a class and experience for them. And from, you know, the goalkeeper in Tom Heaton and lads like Sam Vokes, Ashley Barnes as well, who's an absolute pest. He really stood out to me at Anfield. And then the two centre-halves, Ben Mee and Michael Keane, have been superb for them. Well done to Burnley again. And to be honest with you, you know, if you're asking me now who's going down next year, they wouldn't even come into my mind.
Really?
No, I don't think so. I think even with Newcastle coming up and Brighton, who look like a decent side, I just fancy Sean Dyche to get them together again in the summer. Add a couple of bits of
hard working business.
Yeah, well, that's how he wants to do his business. It must be really tough with the small crowds. They get, you know, almost like Blackburn were and stuff. They're never going to get the huge gates. They're just a small town, so they can't really pull in the commercial deals or whatever of another club. So they've got to do it the right way, the organic way, I suppose. And I trust them to do it again.
I don't know with Burnley. I can't tell. The club I feel I know least about. I mean, they upset me because I did do that away early in the season. They beat Liverpool, and I'm still not sure how it happened. Yeah, I'm still not sure how it happened. They're an interesting side, and he has done a good job. And all the platitudes aside, I would worry for them next season, because I don't think their side will pull in a signing or two the way that the Southamptons and the West Hams and the Palaces will. It does. I think a huge amount hinges for them on the quality that comes up. I think if it's any good, they are going to figure in the relegation conversation.
I think a huge amount that focuses for them, Paul Dehaney, isn't... I'd actually sort of... I'm managed to be disagreeing with both Paul and Rob, which is strange because they're taking completely opposing points. But my thing on them, while I actually think it hinges on for them, is what happens in the first 8 to 10 games. In that, if they have to chase staying up, I think they'll find it really, really hard. Yeah. If they manage to put themselves, do what they did this season, which was just constantly be just ahead of the horizon, or we could do with getting a win, we've got ourselves a win at home. That's what they did this season, and that's what I think. If they get themselves into a situation where they're 10 games into next season, they've only got 6 points on the board, I really would think it's practically impossible. But if they just do what they did this season and they've got 14 points on the board after 10 games, then they'll probably still just be all right.
I think their strength's in their home record and their home support. I think they'll always get a steady amount of points at home, as we saw this season. Most of their points came from home until kind of didn't win until the away until the sort of last few weeks of the season, did they? And then the other thing I would say about them is that they're one of, like Leicester before they won the league, and I sort of said this about that season with Leicester, they're always in games. You know, we talked about Watford, Swansea, you know, Stoke, West Brom, always on the end of, you know, a 3-0 or 4-0. But Burnley always in games.
I think this is my thing about them, about just before we go to the top. Why they need to not be having to chase games. So there's a ton of games this season, for instance, Everton at home, where they're quite happy if that ends up 1-1. We just walk away with our 1-1 and we all go home and pick our bits up. But they're in it. So they don't have to push, they don't have to force the issue. They don't have to think, oh no, we're playing at home, we need these 3 points. Instead, they're able to say, you know what, a point's all right today. But then, if on 85, 87, 88 minutes they can get three, they get three. Whereas I think that what happens to other sides is suddenly you get yourself into a position where you're suddenly thinking, we've really got to win our home games or we're going to be in real trouble. Mm. At which point you're chasing games on 70 and better sides are picking you off. Mm. And I think that's the thing that I'm making.
Down to the manager as well. I think he manages them well and he keeps them grounded.
And doesn't get fit.
He's one of those that doesn't get too excited if they win a few games, doesn't get too downhearted if they lose. So he keeps them on an even keel and I think they all know where they stand.
Do you think maybe that the only danger I can see for them is, you know, there are Premier League jobs and I think there might be one or two more that still pop up, that someone actually takes the risk on Sean Dyche? I mean, he's not the most fashionable manager, and I think, you know, maybe if he looked and sounded like Marco Silva did, that he may have a bit more...
It's that head.
Yeah.
He looks like an ex-Met Police...
He does
it to me, and he sounds like
him. You know what I mean? I think
therefore he gets the old-fashionable move. So if Pulis left West Brom, if I was drawing up a list of immediate replacements for Pulis at West Brom, I'd be offering Sean Dyche the world to come.
Is he not of a similar ilk to Sam Allardyce? Is what I'm saying?
I think Palace would want a bit more. You know, maybe wrongly, but I think Palace would feel as though they want
someone one day is going to go, he's worth a punt, he's done a good job here, he's going to, you know.
Yeah, I think you're right.
What and why not?
We should talk about how English managers all look like senior policemen. You think of Allardyce, he's at the hard bit.
Hodgson.
Definitely Hodgson. He's really high up and corrupt, and he's like, what's that show, Line of Duty? Guy at the top in that. Yeah.
They should recast them all in Line of Duty.
Pulis is off. Yeah, all of these guys. okay. Sorry, lads.
It's all right. Tangent time.
It's all right. We glossed over a few there. Eddie Howe, DS, fast track. There is
handsome Eddie Howe.
There is. Let's talk about the cup final. Let's talk about those two sides of seasons. Neither of which are defined by the cup final, which is in a way, Rob Gutman, a bit of a shame because seasons used to be defined by cup finals if you were in them at this stage. Chelsea and Arsenal. Nothing's gonna apply the balm that Arsene Wenger and Arsenal need for not having finished in the top four this season. The cup would have been that balm had they scraped fourth and got the cup. They could have said, well, we've done that. As it is, it's going to feel only like a consolation prize because that's what they built that fourth place finish into. And on the other hand, Chelsea have had an absolutely fantastic season. No matter what happens at this point, you'd make them obviously favourites against Arsenal on Saturday evening.
Yes, it's a strange one that, you know, those of us who dream of a rejuvenation of the cup will go, yeah, two big sides, this is what you want. And yeah, it really feels a bit of an after the Lord in this show to throw old world cliches in. Because Arsenal's all
like,
about...
It'd be better, wouldn't it? I mean, just to... It would be a more interesting game if it was Chelsea versus Man City.
Yeah.
Or if it was Tottenham versus Arsenal. If you know what I mean? If either of them, those other games had gone the other way, you'd feel as though there was so much more in it. In that really weird sense, you're right, it does all feel a bit like all the important business has been got out the way. Whereas if it was Chelsea-Man City, you'd be thinking to yourself, oh, we're going to see here whether or not next season Guardiola's men, yada, yada, yada.
Is it, that'd be like a playoff for next season, in a sense. From a Chelsea point of view, no one's talking about the double, really, which would be... And still, not that many sides have done the double ever. So it is a big thing if they go and do it. But the achievement of Chelsea bouncing back the way they did and a new man coming into the league and winning the league the way he has, that seems to overshadow the fact that they may achieve the historic cup double. And it's all about Wenger. As a neutral, I will be rooting for Arsene Wenger because I'm an Arsene Wenger fan. But I'm finding it hard to get up for this one. What, bored of the Wenger?
I'm an Arsenal Wenger fan, and I think he's created some of the best sides I've seen in the Premier League in my lifetime. But I'm bored of this every season now. You know,
it's tiring for everyone.
It must be 4 years of Wenger out now, and I don't expect that he won't be managing Arsenal next year. Quite frankly, I'd be very surprised if they did.
If he isn't, or he is?
No, I think he will be managing Arsenal next season.
I just think, I think sometimes it's forget the success. It's like James Bond syndrome. You can have the role for too long. He's just had the role for too long.
Do you feel a man who's been at a club for 21 years wouldn't want some and done what he's done there, which you know is quite incredible? Would be willing to just go out after a cup final and either leave after a board meeting with no goodbye? It just seems weird. Maybe he would, or you know, he was saying.
I think he's hurt by the fans. From all the interviews I've seen recently, he's making it clear. I mean, he even said like a subliminal kind of message in his last thing, saying, "Oh, when it all went wrong, things were going on that you'll find out about at a future date."
Mm.
And I don't know what that means. Does it mean about the players? Does it mean about management or support from the board? I don't know, but. It's definitely something not right, and I get the impression that he might actually go. I think that he's hurt. Win, lose or draw. Well, they can't draw. Well, they can go into extra time and penalties. But win or lose, I think he'll step down. And I don't know if that's completely out of the club and moving up to a sort of more.
He said he's going to stay in football, hasn't he? He said this, no matter what happens, it won't be my last game in football. I don't know if he meant that in a managerial capacity or a board level capacity.
Is it really healthy? Like you guys say, I don't think it's healthy, because if the same thing happens, which does seem to happen with Arsenal every year, you know, this same pattern of starting well, we're going to win the league, all going wrong, blah, 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 win the last five games and usually get into the Champions League. If that happens again, you're going to get the same scenario again. And I think everybody from the supporters to the people who run Arsenal must be looking at now. I'm hearing that Tuchel. He's having a big falling out with Dortmund, apparently.
He hasn't had a great season.
He was
on the verge of going, but, you know, I don't know if that might be a match for Arsenal.
Just on Chelsea as well, I think if they do go and do the double to come from 10th in the league, you know, no matter what, if it's a false position or not, they've comfortably been the best side in the league this season. And I honestly thought it did struggle to be anywhere near a better side than Ancelotti's double winning side. And I think they're running them close. The professionalism and the way they go about getting results is remarkable. And it's down to the manager, I think. As much as people can turn around and say it's down to Mourinho for the failures of last season, then all the successes need to go to Conte, really, this season. I think if he can go and do a double coming from Italy with no prior experience of this league and win it and win the way he's won this season... Absolutely phenomenal.
Conte and Kante.
I do think, right, and I'm going to be what's the word, mean-spirited about it, because I'm mean-spirited about all Liverpool's immediate rivals, especially going to see. I would like to see him with a squad that has to properly be tested the way the rest of it. And I'm not talking about European
parties. I think he will next season, though, won't you?
Well, he may be. I'll reserve judgment on Conte the genius till then. We cited the stats on a previous show. It's 38 changes in the course of a Premier League season, whereas the average amongst the top sides is 120, 130. It's remarkable. It's freakish. And that's starting with a good squad. How much he's been consistently able. Now, of course, he may be doing something incredible behind the scenes in terms of his own healing hands. I don't know. But it seems to me it's almost freakish, this. And that's why I reserve judgment on how good this Chelsea side is. I also say it as someone who's seen Liverpool take 4 points off them, seen them beaten by an ordinary Man United team. And I don't know.
My thing on them is not necessarily style or anything. It's just pure will to win. And I think all their successes has been driven by the manager's will to win. And you know, these clubs sometimes need a fresh voice. And maybe Mourinho in his second spell wasn't fresh enough, considering the amount of lads who were still there from his first time there. But, you know, if they do end up doing a double, which, to be honest with you, I fully expect they will do. I think they're a much better side than Arsenal, and I think it'll be proved at the weekend. You know, you've got to tip your hat a little bit and go, congratulations, as much as it hurts.
Mm. I mean, with cup finals, I'd love to say it'd be easy as a Chelsea just winning, but, you know, I see Wigan beat Man City, do you know what I mean, only a few years ago. So in the cup final, absolutely. Yeah,
well, you've chased them all season, Paul, you know, as a Tottenham fan. That must be frustrating, because they've not really given you a proper sniff, have they?
No, I mean, any time we got close, you know, they just ran away. And to be honest, you know, we won, what was it, 12 out of the last 13 games. You know, you can't do much more than that, you know, to give it a go. But as we've alluded to a lot of times on this show, it was that 13 winning streak that they had that kind of put paid to all of us, really.
Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting one in the context of next season. They finished on 93 points, but within there, there's one freakishly, you know, brilliant run. And even in there, there's a couple of fortunate results. Now, don't get me wrong, they deserve to claw out those fortunate results in a few different senses, but next season, it's unlikely there's a 39 out of 39 point run for any side, just simply given the fact that you get one of them about once every 4 or 5 years, Rob. Mm. And I think that it wouldn't surprise me if next season there's a couple of times we're talking about Chelsea or Tottenham or Manchester City or Liverpool or Manchester United, I don't think Arsenal, but we're talking about one of those five sides and saying, you know what, they've won 10 and 12, they've won 9 and 11, they've won six on the trot from somewhere. That wouldn't surprise me, but the idea of picking up 13 and 13 is something which they won't have the luxury of next season. And that's not to say it's a false place at the minute, but just, yeah, it's going to be tougher.
Yes, you know, it gave them such a... I mean, they had a shaky little first four or five, but it gave them such a bedrock, such a bridgehead.
Well, it's given them about 42% of the points they got in 13 games.
Exactly. And then at the point you go, well, surely it's where this ends is, and I'm going to repeat myself a little bit, where it ends is, Costa goes out for a month or 6 weeks like he did last season. Hazard feels his hamstring. Things like that start to happen. There were little signs, a game here, a game there, some controversy over Costa possibly going to China. But every time that you smelt danger for them, it was fate seemed to deal them out, and it was snuffed out immediately, and therefore they were able to push on.
I hear what you're saying on that a little bit, and I think everyone's been a bit mean-spirited towards this with Chelsea. When Costa did miss a couple of games, they played Pedro through the middle, and I think the game where they didn't have him,
they won
6-0 or something stupid like that. You know, if Hazard would have went down, well, then one of Willian and Pedro would have came in. You know, if Gary Cahill gets a knock, they had John Terry and Kurt Zouma to call on. And
it's one change a game, though, Paul. That's all.
I fully understand, you know, what you're saying, but it's not like they were like the Liverpool 13-14 side where they were going, oh wow, you know, Suarez is out, but you've got to call on some no mark, you know.
I think with Chelsea, it's definitely the manager. I think you've definitely got to look. There's no coincidence, I've said this numerous times, that he won the double in his first season with Juve, and he looks like he'll probably do it here. That's the makings of somebody special, and somebody is able to motivate get the best out of
his win average as a manager is in the high 60s. Yeah. You know, and I think most league winning managers that leave the Premier League are in mid to high 50s. You know, if they do a stint, so his career so far is remarkable.
Yeah, to not be mealy mouthed about it, I can say he didn't have luck with injuries. He didn't have to face a full European season, etc., etc. But he can only do what he has to do. Yeah, getting 93 points is 93 points. There's no arguing with it. All I'd say is that before we sort of acclaim this Chelsea side, not so much the manager, but this side and its achievement, I think it'd be easier to do it in the context of next season.
Yes.
Okay. Talked a lot about Spurs. We'll put them to one side, and then I think the general consensus will be that they've had a very good season.
Okay.
60 goal difference, 86 points, 86 goals on the board, only 26 against. The stats of Spurs' season are spectacular. We've talked about Arsenal as well, and we've covered Liverpool often enough across any of the different ways in which you can listen to us talk. City find themselves with a perfectly respectable 78 points haul. No other silverware, Rob, and they'll be feeling a lot to do. I mean, it's just come out whilst we've been talking. Gail, I think it's Gael Clichy's been released on a free. Jesus Navas has been released on the free whilst we've been sitting here. There's a fair bit of rebuilding that actually Zabaleta's gone. There's a fair bit of rebuilding that actually needs to happen.
Zachary Sanya will surely go.
Yeah, and you know, there's bits and pieces they haven't quite. They've managed to almost have another transitional season, which is fine. But you're sort of looking at a summer, thinking this is another transitional summer, and next season you think 78 points and no trophies won't be looked upon quite as kindly.
Yeah, everything's relative, and you know, you said good, bad, and we introduced neutral. This has been a bad season for Manchester City. I think you'd said to them at the beginning of the season, you're bringing in Guardiola, the world's most highly rated manager, I think it would have been fair to say. You're arming him with loads of cash to bring in some good players, and he's going to be worrying about whether he's making top four on the last day of the season. You'd have gone, fucking hell, something went badly wrong there. Oh, and he, by the way, gets knocked out of the Champions League by Monaco. You'd have gone, so it's not a good season for City. And it's interesting you said might be able to throw Yaya Toure into the need to replace mix. There's actually a bit of a numbers game they've got to do, as well as their usual buying quality. They're actually going to have to pad out a squad. Having said that, there are worse problems to have than I'm sure there won't be much change out of 200 million gross minimum from City this summer. But it's a test for Guardiola. I think everyone gives him this season, although, you know, the critics would say, hang on, he had a year to think about this as well. Mm. Critics would give him this season. But he kind of needs to win the league next year.
Scored 80 goals, Paul, in the end. Got themselves 80 goals. They only lose one of the last 10, and they end up on 78 points, but it's no trophies. Conversely, Jose Mourinho, another contender for world's best manager. Manchester United lose fewer games than Manchester City. They had 6 months unbeaten. Only scored 54 goals across the course of their entire season in the league, but walk away with a League Cup and with now a Europa League and a Champions League place.
Yeah, it's so frustrating, isn't it? You know that. From a Tottenham point of view, I look at it and think, you know, if you compare the way that we play to Manchester United, you know, they've walked away with two trophies, we've walked away with none, and I just feel that's harsh. You know, you can't take the trophies away from him. Mourinho's used this, he's looked at this. I think both Manchester clubs have underachieved, you know, to be quite honest with you, in the league. Yeah. I think they both set out to win the league at the beginning of the season, and they both spent the money to do so. And I think if they were, you know, the two top clubs in any other league, they'd spent this amount of money in any other league in the world and come in the positions that they have, I think they both wouldn't be in a job. And I think Pep kind of alluded to that and said, you know, if I was at a big club, which...
He did, he admitted. He was... Yeah, I like the humility Pep showed. I think was totally admirable.
Yeah.
It's the best thing he's done this season.
Yeah, and, you know, I find he's a bit too spiky for me in his press conferences. Things aren't going his way. He can be quite condescending and arrogant. But, you know, having said that, on the positive side for Man City, I would say that with Kompany, or if they get a player to replace him and be as consistent as him, and then with Gabriel Jesus, if you think that they had them two for a longer period of time, I think it'd probably be, you know, closer to Tottenham. Not so much closer to Chelsea, but closer to Tottenham.
I think there's a quiet vibrancy about what Man City are doing, to be honest with you. I think with next season you're going to be dealing with, I'd imagine they'll put their goalkeeping problems to bed in the summer, but then you're going to be dealing with John Stones, a year older and probably a year better, Sane, Sterling, Gabriel Jesus. You'd imagine Gundogan will be back at some point.
Big loss.
Yeah, who was his I truly think without, you know, the transfer fee won't represent it. I think that was their marquee signing of the summer. He's one of the best midfielders in football.
And he knows the system that Pep wanted, so that was a big blow.
So, you know, you've got De Bruyne, who's remarkable, and towards the end of the season, watching Jesus and Aguero together is frightening. So I'm worried if I was putting money on the title winners next season, it would probably be them.
On United?
No, I don't even think United will get top four next season. I think they've got a long way to go to catch Liverpool, Tottenham. To be honest, I think they may have a similar season to the one we've had this year. But I think we'll have a better one. I think Liverpool are a side on the up, as much as, you know, UEFA Cup winners and League Cup winners, Man United will want to. They've got to make ground up on Liverpool. Don't get me wrong, they can probably go and splash some cash, but the noises coming out of Anfield are that Liverpool will as well. Arsenal would be the side for me that should be worried if they're losing Ozil and Sanchez. There's serious work to do to replace Ozil's numbers first Sanchez's numbers first and foremost. That's going to be no easy thing to replace without Champions League football. So there's that top six battle will be just as difficult again next season. I think for me, I think Man City will probably be able to do the best business. But then if United get Griezmann, it could be that one player, you know, that can propel them. I don't really know what his level is, truth be told.
United is a fascinating season because it feels like they've salvaged it on a couple of technicalities to me. And this is not just being a mean-spirited red to the other Reds, although it probably is. It's not. I'll say this, and I think I'm going to be quite categorical about it. I don't think Jose Mourinho has done anything to correct the slide in his status as a world-class manager. I think if we're looking at his fantastic career, it definitely peaked a few years back, and it has been, and he's been going backwards steadily every year, and this is part of the process of him going backwards, and those two shiny pots don't change that solid fact as far as I'm concerned.
Don't you think he's the master now of the one game, kind of? You know, if there's a game that he's to concentrate on...
I think we used to feel like that about Rafa.
Yeah, he can build a plan to get through that game, whether it's boring the hell out of people, stifling people, or whatever way you want to put it, you know, bullying young kids. And I mean that in the nicest way possible, not actually physically bullying.
Last night against Ajax,
you know, men against boys. And I think that he's become that now. He's become a specialist manager, in games, as opposed to... I can't see him winning the Premier League. I know I could be putting my mouth on this, but... I think there's too many other good managers and good teams out there that
he was sort of sacked by Real Madrid, and he was sacked, no matter how we want to dress it up, I thought there might be no way back for him here, and it could be a really bad appointment
for Chelsea, as it was.
For Chelsea. But then he goes and wins the league in his first season comfortably.
Second season.
Was it in second? Yeah. Sorry, yes.
He does.
He tries Costa and Fabregas, doesn't he? And he goes and he wins the league. He goes to United now, and he's felt them out a little bit, put trophies on the table, got them Champions League football, no matter the route they did to get there, they've done it. This season coming, they've obviously got the resources to go and to buy who they want. But the thing for me is, I just think everybody else is a bit more competitive now than they were when Chelsea got to that second season, and I think he'll find it a lot tougher.
United to me feel a little bit like what I was saying about Burnley before, in that it's all about the first 10 games.
Mm. Yeah,
but it'll all be about the first 10 games for United. I think if United can get off to a flyer, win 8 or 9 out of those 10, then I think everyone else might spend the season looking at their back. But if they're back in a scrap again, then I just wonder whether or not there's quite the
I think they need to be convincing as well this time.
That's what I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I don't mean... Yeah, though they started this season, I think they start with 3 straight wins.
But I agree with you. What you mean is also look like the best team in the country. That's
yeah,
what
4-0.
I know within the United tradition, as they would
say. Twos, threes, fours, yeah.
I think that's what they need from the first 10 games. Yeah. Listen, it's been a fantastic season. Thanks for listening to 50-50 Football. Thank you very much to Paul Senior, Rob Gutman, and to Paul Dehaney, and everyone who's contributed throughout the season. Robbie Scotcher as well today. Have a fantastic summer. We'll be back in the August.